Hey there, it's Jim Stengel, host of the CMO Podcast. We're all marketers here, so let's be real for a sec. We all know that your website shouldn't be a static asset. It should be a dynamic part of your strategy to build your brand and drive conversions. That's marketing 101. But 54% of marketing leaders say web updates take too long. That's over half of you listening right now. And that's where Webflow comes in. Their visual-first platform allows you to build, launch, and optimize web pages fast. That means you can set ambitious marketing goals and your site can rise to that challenge. Learn why teams like Dropbox, IDEO, and Orange Theory all trust Webflow to achieve their most ambitious goals today at webflow.com. You told me in the last interview that the first brand that made an impact on you was Nike because you grew up in Beaverton. Of course, it had to be Nike. Is there a second brand that you would mention that made an impact on you early?
The brand is a marketer, early marketer that I would say that had a big impact on me and still does. And I still think about it a lot, even though I don't use the product that much, is Red Bull. When I was still forming my thoughts on what great brands do, the way they innovated behind a purpose, the ability for them to be so disruptive in so many like really interesting ways on a product that was good, but not necessarily like the most amazing thing of all time. How they spun into a media company, how they spun into different events. I've really appreciated like watching what they've done and learning from them.
Hi, I'm Jim Stengel, and I help major brands find their purpose and activate it, and the profits follow. For 7 years, I was the global marketing officer for Procter & Gamble, where I oversaw the marketing of hundreds of brands. You may not know it, but the CMOs, the chief marketing officers of all of your favorite brands, are trying to connect you with your favorite products and services through purpose. And on this show, I delve into how they do it. My Earth Week guest today in the CMO Podcast is Brad Hironaga, the chief brand officer of Cotopaxi, the colorful outdoorsy brand you are likely seeing around more and more on the streets, in the airports, and of course, in the outdoors. It is a fast-growing brand, just about doubling its size every year for the past 3 years. Cotopaxi's products include backpacks, hip packs, jackets, and other outdoor products and experiences. Cotopaxi is only about 10 years old, founded in Salt Lake City by Davis Smith, who was inspired by his time living in Latin America to create this brand. Cotopaxi is named after a volcano in Ecuador, where Davis lived, and the brand icon is a llama for the quirky herd animals of the high Andes. My guest Brad is a return guest on this show. We hosted Brad way back in December 2020 when he was the chief marketing officer for General Mills. Brad worked at General Mills for 16 years, four as CMO. He briefly worked as interim CMO for Beyond Meat after leaving General Mills. We will talk about that. And he joined Cotopaxi in September 2022 as its first chief brand officer. This is my conversation with a chief brand officer who is very happy these days. Maybe it's all the time in nature. Maybe it's living in Minnesota. Here's Brad. Brad, welcome back to the CMO Podcast and happy Earth Week to you. I have to ask you, with a brand like Cotopaxi, what are you doing to celebrate Earth Day?
Jim, it's great to see you again. Thanks for having me back on here.
Absolutely.
Before I answer your question, I'd say like the one thing I wanted to tell you at the very beginning is you are, and you know, in marketing and as a CMO, you get to do a number of different interviews, have the opportunity to meet a lot of people. You honestly are one of the best interviewers I've ever spoken with.
Oh, thank you.
Just so you know, it's been such a, you have such insightful questions and so provocative. So I appreciate you inviting me back to talk about this. And yeah, Earth Week is for us in Cotopaxi is a really kind of a big time. We time that with our impact report, which actually just came out last week. Mm-hmm. You know, that report for us is really kind of the bellwether of how we're doing as a brand. You know, our team that works on impact and sustainability, they're a small but very mighty team. And I know we'll probably talk a lot about them in this course of this conversation, but they do a lot of work around that report and really thoroughly across all of ESG with specific emphasis on the G, the governance of how we run our business and how we monitor and measure how we're doing and where we're succeeding and where we're not. You know, I wouldn't say that's necessarily a big marketing kind of commercial push behind that, but it's a really significant moment for our company to kind of see the culmination of the work that's happened. And we do share it very broadly and use it pretty thoroughly with partners and talk about it with our consumers, and a lot of our consumers who buy into the brand care about it. So it's a really, we're excited for the month because we know that the year's work is going to be reported in April.
Sure. What do you do internally when that report comes out other than share it? I mean, do you do anything around it? Any emphasis, any kind of renewal of your culture?
You know, I would say the interesting thing about a place like Cotopaxi, you know, which has been built with this mission in mind from the very beginning and from when the founder started the company, it was part of the operating model. We talk about this a little bit. The operating model of the brand was, you know, 1% of our sales are going to go to our foundation. And because we're built like that, and because they were visionary in how they created this company, we talk about our impact and what we are trying to achieve all the time. So in other, you know, in other places I've experienced that, you know, that this may come up where it's like, hey, once a year, or there's going to be a sustainability meeting, and it's a very separate kind of time. This is really something that's like such part of the fabric of the everyday that we just are constantly in conversations about what we're doing around circularity, what we're doing with our foundation in terms of how we're trying to alleviate poverty, and thinking about, you know, all the other impacts that our innovation is going to have, whether or not is it going to have a positive impact on what we're trying to do, or is it just something commercial that we don't necessarily want to go after. We have all that of our business. And then secondarily, our human resources, people's team, does an amazing job of bringing in partners that are talking about impact. So that's kind of constantly happening as well, where we're having conversations, you know, usually every month. And then in addition to that, we have a lot of opportunities to volunteer ourselves. And a lot of that work is coordinated too internally. People are constantly sharing, you know, what they did as a team to give back to their community, what they're doing individually. We're a remote workforce, so people, you know, sometimes are on their own. And so that kind of sharing is really, I would say, like present all the time. And so for us, I think that this month is, while it's a good kind of like culmination of the efforts from the past year, it doesn't necessarily feel so different because the conversations are really ongoing.
Well, listen, you joined us last time on the show in December 2020, when you were the CMO of General Mills, a company where you spent 16 years. And we talked back then about Lucky Charms and how much you were eating of the brand back then. So I have to ask, you've moved companies. Are you still a fan? Do you still crack open the Lucky Charms every morning?
Oh, man. You know, there's a few brands from General Mills that I will never let go. Lucky Charms being one of them. Cheerios being another one. I think I shared with you one of the best ever chocolate chip cookie recipes.
Yes, you did.
That still is a huge hit and is still something that I think is like a go-to. But I will also say, and you probably experienced this at Procter too, I remember going to the grocery store the first time after I wasn't working at the company. And I definitely leaned into buying a lot of competitive items I probably would never have bought. So yeah, I walked proudly out of the grocery store with Frosted Flakes in my cart. Very excited about that. And a number of other things that I've tried. So that's it. I feel a little more freedom to do that. Now, conversely, now as I've shifted into this job, I've had to get rid of a lot of Patagonia and North Face.
Yeah.
Brands I admire very much, and I had some of their stuff. So it's funny how you build those loyalties when you're in these roles. But there's some great products from General Mills that are still staples for sure.
Last time we talked, your sons were 14 and 11. So I guess they're like 17 and 14 now.
Yeah.
What are you enjoying most about being a dad in this phase of your life? We were just talking before the show about different phases of our life. I'm a bit ahead of you. But what are you enjoying about this phase?
I think this phase, I mean, everyone is great and everyone has different challenges, as you know well. And I remember, this is the advice I got when I first had kids a long time ago from somebody, a colleague of mine. And they said, you know, when you have small kids, you'll have a lot of small problems. And when you have big kids, you'll have fewer but big problems. Yeah. Yeah. And I think their problems, as they've kind of gotten, you know, to this age and life stage, are much more relatable, because, you know, I can relate to a lot of the things that they're dealing with or trying to, challenges they're trying to figure out, or what they want to do with their life. Mm-hmm. So on that side of it, you know, the stakes, I feel like, always become a little bit bigger. But the excitement that I have, I think, of getting to spend time with them and seeing their own points of view on things emerge and their personalities really take shape, and the passions that they have, that they love to do, and the things that they really enjoy, to be a part of those things is, I think, the most amazing part about being a parent. You just get to experience it. And in some ways, you get to sit back and kind of just enjoy that. And I've really enjoyed that part of seeing them develop. You know, my older son is almost 18, you know, from a boy to a man, getting ready to go out into the world on his own. And my other one's right behind him. So I just have really enjoyed those moments together and getting to see that development. And then I've also just loved when they do pick up things that I like to do as well. Both of my kids have gotten really into golfing. They've just started playing with the high school team just for as a pickup, and they've started to really want to do that. So I don't have to like drag them with me if I want to go, you know, play around or go to the driving range. They're bugging me to go. And I love that, because that's actually, my dad was really into golf and I got into it through him. And I always talk about this with my friends who have kids as well. It's like the best moments that I had with my dad were going and walking on a golf course or driving in a car on a golf course when we were side by side 4 or 5, 6 hours together. That never would have happened if we had just been, at a dinner would be a lot shorter than that, or mm-hmm. phone call. And so I just think that those are moments that I just really appreciate. And so it excites me that I'm going to maybe have that opportunity to share those same type of moments with my kids playing a sport that's super fun and challenging and outdoors and things that I think I've bonded with all sorts of other friends on and made a new relationship. So that part of it's been really, really great as well, to share some things that we both are really passionate about.
Do your boys think your current job is cooler than your job at General Mills?
For a time, I don't think that they did, just because of everybody knows all the brands at General Mills.
Yeah.
Everyone has them in their house and in their pantry, in their fridge. And this was so different. It's such smaller and less known. But what's great about having teenage kids is they are the barometer for what's cool mm-hmm. and what's not cool. And in a brand like Cotopaxi, that's a brand that's in apparel and gear and fashion, that's a good bar to try to attain. And so I leverage them as, like we all do with our families, as like a focus group of two on what kids are wearing at school and why they like this pack, or would they ever wear this, or what about this jacket? And I get great free insights from them. I don't know if they're free, actually, I'm paying for a lot of their stuff, but I get great insights from them. And I think that for me is really fun. And I think because they know the size and where Cotopaxi is as a smaller, newer brand, now what it stands for. And I also think, this generation, I find it, you see it in all the research and everyone mm-hmm. you talk to. This generation, though, to me, and I'm sure they always say this to the next one, they really do care about being conscious around their choices they're making and what they're buying and what brands say about them and are brands trying to do good. And the stories, as we've talked about that, they've really, I think, become like huge advocates of it. And so now in family pictures and on trips when we're going places where they could choose to look as cool as possible, they're wearing Cotopaxi. They've got packs on, they got bags on. When we see people wearing it, they're pointing it out. We're talking about it. We went to some stores in Seattle on a college trip a couple weeks ago, and they wanted to go in all the stores and try stuff on. So that part's been really, really pretty fun. Just a different kind of category, mm-hmm. I think. That allows you, that's very different than food, that I've had to learn a lot about. It's been very different. I thought it wouldn't be so different, and it's been much more different. And going in and trying something on and what a brand says about you when you're mm-hmm. willing to put on your back, right, is really a fun kind of challenge. And so that's been really cool to them to come along and learn more about it and be interested. And my older son, and I was talking about your kids as well, my older son is told me recently, he's like, I think I want to go into business. I think I want to do marketing. And I was like, okay, well then I'm not doing everything completely wrong. Wow. I did something right. Maybe I'll go to college and we'll see, but.
Very cool. Very cool. Hey, I wear your hip sack, if that's what you call it. That's what I called it back in my day. But I wear the hip sack a lot because I like to carry around my phone, my sunglasses, maybe a credit card. And so I have it on probably every day at some point.
You really?
And I get so many compliments.
Amazing.
There are some people who are in the know and they know the brand and they go right to it. And there are some who just say, whoa, what is that? So it does make a statement for those who know the brand and those who don't.
That is awesome. Well, first of all, thank you for wearing that. Especially someone like you wearing that is very good for the brand. Secondly, I think it's really, really interesting, because I would say a lot of times, if I'm going through an airport or traveling mm-hmm. or, walking around or doing something as a family, I'm watching people more for what they're wearing, of course, now than I probably would before. But I always wouldn't necessarily remember, things wouldn't necessarily stand out. It's just, it's been so fun for Cotopaxi to see. And I think it's a combination of a number of things. The colors make a statement mm-hmm. for sure. But people who do know it and do rep the brand, there's a community that they feel like they're a part of. And we see that all over the place. And so, example, I was in Amsterdam traveling, and we were in one of the train stations. And I was like, oh, I'll see the brand maybe, once in a while on a trip abroad. And we do sell internationally, but it's not a huge part of the market right now. And the number of packs I saw, and you see them from everywhere just because the color stands out, was all over the place. And I went up to every single person, whether, of course, I ran up to them in my big English versus actually trying to speak a different language, but it was Cotopaxi, and people love talking about it. And I do think there's this community that it has created, that Davis, the founder, has really wanted to instill. We want to create a movement with this brand. And I love that the colors, whether this has been by design or not, like really stand for something. And when you come together, you see it and it draws people together. And this is that movement and this sense of community that I think brands, if done right, can really help kind of cultivate for people. So love to hear that you're having that experience with it when you wear it.
For sure. Tell the story a bit, briefly. Tell the story about the multiple colors, because I didn't know that before I started my research for this episode. It's a very cool story.
Yeah. Well, perfectly timed for Earth Day.
Yeah.
So there's a part of our collection, and it goes across mostly in our packs and different bags that we have, called Deldia. And Deldia was created really from the idea of sustainability first, in which a lot of the fabric that we purchase is called dead stock fabric. It's a weird name for fabric that was otherwise going to go into a landfill. It was overly purchased and another manufacturer wasn't going to use it. So we buy that fabric and then we use that to manufacture and make these packs. And the output of that is really pretty amazing. There's a ton of creativity that goes into it and a ton of timing as well. As these bags come through, you know, there's selections that are made by the folks that are working in terms of what color combinations are going to go together. So every single one of the packs that you purchase is going to be different from any other pack because of the color combination. And that color combinations are side panels, there's straps, there's buckles, there's zippers, all the things that you imagine that might go into equipment. And so you have this really amazing kind of like one of one thing. And then you also have this just really kind of any color set you want to have, you can get with Deldia. And so it's a marketer's dream, really, because you've got a sustainability story in the background that's really truly part of the brand. You've got a color scheme that you can play with all of the time. Mm-hmm. And we do, in terms of our collabs that we try to do, we like partners to come in on that brand because then it can just explode their creativity. And then the last part is that you've got an ability to talk about, you know, one of one. And we see, you see all of the collectibles industry that's blowing up in terms of, you know, baseball cards is a great example. And so that those three elements, I think, are really fun to play with. And we've started to use that as we do a lot. We have college interns that we work with. We are doing a lot of work in music festivals now as a place where our brand shows up because of some of the DNA of the brand in the beginning days. And that product in particular is great because it allows you to be unique. It allows you to be yourself, especially as a younger person coming out. And so we see that to be really popular, especially with younger people. But of course, colors can speak to anybody at any age. And so it really kind of goes anywhere.
We've all been there. You spend millions of dollars each year driving traffic to your company's website, and then the results come in and they're just not what you hoped. On top of that, 81% of marketing leaders say website ownership is a challenge. So, what do you do? Well, you switch to Webflow. Let me tell you why. Webflow's visual-first platform empowers your team to own your company's most valuable dynamic marketing asset, your website. From launching a new site to optimizing for SEO and conversions, Webflow gives you the tools you need to drive business growth fast. Unlock your website's full potential when you build, manage, and host with Webflow. Get started today at webflow.com. When we talked 3.5 years ago, we talked about your biggest leadership challenge at the time. And I don't know if you remember this, but it was to not get too far ahead of people, too far ahead of your organization, to take the time during a transformation, during a change, to be sure you bring them with you, because you tend to see things quickly, you want to move quickly, and sometimes you didn't bring the people along with you. You know, we're here now a few years later. Do you think you've made progress on that, Brad?
I do, and I don't know if that's because of intentional like work and development on it or by just the circumstances that I've kind of put myself into with this particular job. And what I mean by that is, you know, I chose a job that had a lot of different parts to it than previously that I was in, you know, big company, you know this really well, like you're pretty grooved in terms of your career development. You may have a little choice, but they're going to kind of decide for you. And a lot of the things that are big companies that are the biggest benefits that you don't have to worry about at all, that's not the case when you're at something much, much smaller. And so for me, it was like size of company is different. You know, it's a private equity backed, which I've learned a lot about that. I didn't know much about that before, but I was really interested in getting into that kind of part of business. Apparel, very different from food. The life stage of the company, so early, so young, and then mission, really, truly mission oriented and heavily D2C. And those are all skills that I chose this because I was like, I really want to go and I want to learn all of those things because I haven't had those experiences at General Mills where I, you know, it was much, much different. I got a lot of great experiences there, but they were very different. And so as I came into this job, I think the first thing I realized right away, even though I knew they were different, was like, well, I have a lot to learn. there's a lot to learn that I don't know how to do. And we are also working in a remote environment, meaning so I couldn't just, you know, turn my corner and be like, hey, can you show me this? Or, hey, what system are we using for this? Or what is this acronym? And I don't get it. And so the learning curve is really steep. And I think because of that, it really required a lot more of me kind of getting back in and learning and trying to figure out things and doing, being in that kind of really like growth mindset around, okay, well, I gotta learn all this stuff. I gotta try to learn all this stuff as much as I can. In addition to coming in as someone who has a lot of marketing experience, who knows how to build brands, who brings, you know, a good network of people that I can kind of pull in to help us kind of build this thing. And so I kind of found myself in that where I was going back and forth to like, I'd be in the room and I'd be very experienced compared to a very, you know, young company, to then being like a guy who doesn't know, a guy who has never really worked in retail before, or hasn't really, like, you know, or is working on e-com where we had e-com, but it was much smaller and it played a different role at General Mills. And so that for me has kind of shifted where I think where that was the previous challenge is a little bit different. I'd been there a long time. I kind of knew it, you know, and honestly, the difference of a big company is an optimization culture where that's kind of, hey, just grow a point and we'll get some more margin out of this, to a, hey, what if you could grow 100% and you could do it half the time, and every room I come into and I'm like, hey, I have an idea. And they're like, yes. And then also this, versus going into a room in General Mills where it's like, no, I don't think so. We tried that 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. It was like a culture shock for me a bit. And so I think that challenge of seeing ahead and being, it wasn't the challenge as much as it was to like, kind of almost on the opposite side, say, okay, actually, everybody, we need to kind of like step back a bit and like kind of refine this into like a prioritization plan. And so I found myself in some ways like flipping roles, which was really weird too. And I was like, this is so odd. But I actually loved it because I was like, I find myself usually trying to play kind of like trying to find a way to be the bridge in whatever situation I'm in. And I found myself being a different kind of bridge in a company. And I'm still figuring out the right fit for me for that, but it's been a totally different kind of like learning stretch, which I, at this stage of my career, have really appreciated. Like I wanted that. That's why I sought something so different.
What would you say your leadership challenge is now?
So many ways to think about this. I'll give you one offhand that's an easy one, which is leading remotely is really challenging, I think, in marketing. And I'm sure you probably heard this from other people, because part of the reason I took this job is I wanted it to be remote. I wanted that flexibility right now. But having the ability to be remote and build a team and a company, like people want to work at Codify. We have the luxury of like wanting, talent wants to be there. They see the potential of the brand, but not being able to spend as much time together in a room, mentoring, talking about things, building together, innovating, you know, that kind of feel that you get when you're like, you're getting an idea and then how you want to execute it. You know, doing that in Slack or doing that on video all the time for me is like, doesn't feel great. And I don't think it feels great for everybody on the creative team. And so we try to figure out more ways to do that and try to figure out ways to kind of like connect the dots together. But I think that's a challenge. That's a work challenge and also a leadership challenge. And then I think the second challenge is just really thinking through how to prioritize and choose what to go after for a brand like this. I can't tell you how many great ideas I get from everybody that's either touched this brand or is working on this brand or wants to work on this brand. I have just lists of things that we could do. And that's a great luxury. And I think anybody that's worked on a brand like that, you're like, oh man, just that's so awesome. But it's also a different challenge when you're working on a big brand. It's like, okay, we've done this before. We need an idea. We have money, but we don't have an idea. But like the opposite. It's like, well, a smaller brand, you don't have the resources, but you got lots of ideas. That is the case with Codepoxy. And for me to lead through that and try to maybe listen to everybody who, we are all part of the brand at Codepoxy is another thing. It's like everyone kind of is part of the brand there, which I love, but everyone's got ideas. And so to try to navigate that and deliver on what we say we're going to deliver while also innovating, while also working with a small team and prioritizing, that is a challenge that I'm daily trying to figure out if I'm doing it correctly.
What have you done? Have you developed sort of a criteria or a filter or a framework for making decisions or not?
You're going to love this. So I remember when I worked, at General Mills, and I don't remember when this was my career there, but they were like, hey, we're going to put together a framework. We're going to use an OGSM and we're going to use that. And I was like, ugh.
Objectives, goals, strategies, measures. Yeah,
exactly. And I was like, I don't like this. Like, I don't try to tie me down with this. I already have plans where we're so formulaic on everything we do. And then I got to Codepoxy in about 6 months in, and I was like, you know what, everyone, we need an OGSM. So that's been the one thing that we've introduced, just this planning cycle. And it's still, I think, a work in progress, but it is help. I mean, you know, some of these frameworks and tools, and that's what I like about working for a big company. You just, you have a set of things that, you know, you see them work and you see what the value is. And that is the job of the scale, a scale job, which is what we're in here now. It's not a startup, it's a scale up. And I think some of those tools are really great building blocks to take this step to the next level. So we've used that a lot. And I think the challenge for us has been really like, you know, I can build an OGSM for the marketing team or the brand team, but if it doesn't go all the way up to the top and then come through, it's not really effective. And so that was a big emphasis of mine working with the CEO, Damian, who's great and comes from Eddie Bauer. He comes from a big company or bigger company. So we were able to kind of, I think, help with some of our experience, bring some of those things into the business. And we're still doing a lot of that where they had tools and resources that were much, they were fast and they were quick and good for the time, but like they're outdated. Now we need the next big thing. And so that's been one thing that's been really helpful.
Before we leave your leadership challenges, you talked about leading in a remote environment. I mean, yeah, everybody's struggling with it. I hear something about it every day. Mm-hmm. Have you learned anything non-obvious that would be helpful for our listeners in building a culture and mentoring and coaching and all the great things that great leaders do? What's been working for you?
I actually think it requires, and I'm not, this isn't like, you know, the most appealing answer to follow, but I think it actually requires more time spent together, more intentionally, even if it means, you know, you're on a call or you're on a video or however you're connecting. It just requires more time that you're spending doing that versus if you were in person, you know, you could do a meeting and then you can walk off because you know, you can connect with the person if you need to. I find that I have to be much more intentional with my schedule, much more intentional with who I'm connecting with, because I don't have the luxury of being in the same proximity with somebody else. And so for me, that's really crucial, because I think I would say a lot of the success I've experienced in my career has been built through personal relationships and building and really understanding what the potential is in people and really helping them kind of get there. And we just don't, you know, you don't have lunch with somebody or you start in a room with somebody. You don't have that same, you know, I don't necessarily have that same kind of like gut instinct with them. And so I need to have more time with them in two-dimensional worlds than I would maybe if it was in person. And so I think that for me has been like really being, especially the hypo talent, that you can see it a little bit. You're like, I just need to spend more time with this person because they can do so much more and I can get them on a path where they can really chase what they want to go after. So that's been really important. And I think I can do better on that too. Like there's more opportunities where I'm like, oh, I should really connect with this person, but I just don't, how am I going to fit this in? So that's been a challenge, but I think that has worked for me. The other thing that's been, you know, why that makes it more difficult is a lot of us have joined now. I think during COVID, it was like, okay, we've all worked for these companies. And so we know everybody, I got the relationships. Now it's so different. It's like, we've never met in person. I don't really know you. And so you're building it, you know, remotely only for the most part. Now, Cotopaxi does a great job of, we may have talked about this before, but we have something called a summer camp, which is when we get together in person for like a week and we like camp together. And I will say, like, I was like, oh, that's going to be, you know, when are we doing that? How are we going to fit that in? It's remarkable how even meeting even a couple times a year and doing things like that can really set a foundation for the period. So that's other things you can start to work into what your kind of like remote working plan is to be successful, I think.
You spoke a minute ago about your CEO, Damian. This is interesting. He came into the company from the outside. You came into the company from the outside and your HR director came in from the outside all at about the same time. So tell us about that experience and what the three of you onboarding, kind of forming bonds, but you know, between each other and the team that was there. What was that experience like? How'd you make it work? And, you know, what could others learn from that?
Yeah. Well, Damian, you know, came from Eddie Bauer. He'd been in the outdoor industry forever and he came from product. And so he knows design and he knows the industry really well. And so immediately, you know, he'd been a CEO. So he had that experience. You know, Grace came in and she leads our people officer. She's our impact officer. She's got a really big remit. And she came in from Jabani, and Grace is like the most exceptional human leader that I think I've ever met. And so you have these really two like highly qualified, very skilled people. And I, you know, came from an experience of working for, you know, big company and big brands. And so I think it was actually fortuitous that we all started together, because I think we could kind of come in and learn together. And we were bringing, even though we were all new and came from bigger companies, we were like all like bringing different perspectives too. So it wasn't like we're all kind of like cookie cuttered in. I think the intentionality of doing that and then pairing us with the other parts of the executive team of people who had been at the company for a long time was really important as well. It wasn't just like, okay, it's a full transplant of a new team, executive team in. It was like done more, I think, strategically to kind of like place in different folks. And so Stefan, who is a co-founder with Davis, you know, was running operations and international. We had Gary, who was our finance, chief finance, had been there a long time as well. And so we had other people that had been in the organization. So I think it was a good mix of folks to come in. So we could learn also what had worked, what hadn't worked, what was the culture, all of those things. It also forced us, I think, right away to kind of coming in together to really kind of create bonds kind of quickly to figure out how are we going to work as an executive team and what our role is going to be. And I think we're still in some ways, like we're still kind of evolving and figuring that out because the company is changing so rapidly. You know, we started, it was less than 100 million and now we're over 150 million. So there's just a lot of growth and a lot of change. And so I think we had to figure out how are we going to work in this moment and then be adaptable as things kind of change and shift. And I find that's to be sometimes hard, right? From leaders who have come from bigger companies, like being adaptable and agile and shifting is not always necessarily the easiest skill set. But both Grace and Damian have been exceptional at that. The other key factor of this was Davis, who was the founder, and he was, you know, the CEO before Damian and had been there, you know, obviously since the beginning. He made it very easy for us to come in as well as leaders to this group. And I think that was also really crucial, as his leadership is very humble and very open. And so we stepped in and we felt like we're part of this thing, the family from the start. And then as he's kind of stepped away to go do a mission work that he wanted to pursue for his church, he's still chairman of our board. We were like all set up and ready to go. Like we'd had time with him and we knew exactly what we were, you know, trying to achieve together. And we'd had, you know, enough of his kind of like mission kind of instilled in us that we were directionally all aligned on that, which is great.
What's the greatest inspiration you took from the founder? I listened to a podcast, a Guy Raz podcast about him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, really good. What a story.
Oh, man.
What a human being. What a set of experiences. What courage to walk into so many things sort of blind and make them work.
He is the definition of an inspirational leader. Like, you know, you say, oh, that person's inspirational. I worked with them. And you can see it with certain people, right? But it's not even a question with him. Like he walks into a room and it's like, and I get that that's a founder thing sometimes, but it is different with Davis. He's got a personality and a humanity and a humbleness around him that just emanates. And you can feel it when you're in a room with him. And so I think, you know, he really poured a lot of himself into this brand and what he, you know, the good that he wants to do. And, you know, he lived in Latin America for a long time. He saw what was happening in terms of different communities that were, you know, living in poverty and not being able to thrive. And so like he just poured himself into that part of it. And I think because it was so authentic and because he believes so strongly that businesses need to have this role in doing good, I think everyone that joins there is like, we come there like, oh, I don't want to let Davis down. Like Davis is like, he set such a compelling vision. And as a marketer, stepping into a brand like this, it's like a dream. I mean, there's so many great things that he just knew instinctively. So I think all of that has been really powerful to see kind of that in terms of what he's set. He's such a natural too when it comes to communicating and inspiring others outside of the company that I think it's just, you know, some people are born natural leaders and some people just have that gift. And he's one of those people. He's just got a style and a substance to him that is very, very attractive to follow in terms of, you know, what he's trying to do. And because the mission for me personally coming into this company, like I want to be part of a company that's going to do good. Like I got to a point in my life where it's like, yeah, I need that to be part of what I do every day. And I don't want to necessarily go work for a nonprofit, but I want to do something. And because that was so clear at Cotopaxi and there was no denying it. And there still is no denying it, even as he's stepped into a different role. It's a very appealing place if that's important to you as a person.
What would you say is the key to success for today's CMO? If you said data, you wouldn't be the only one. At Deloitte, however, we believe data is only half of the equation. The other half, story. Because data is the language of business, but story is the language of humans. And we believe the most successful CMOs know how to harness the power of both data and story. To learn more about Deloitte's CMO program and how we can help today's CMOs succeed, visit cmo.deloitte.com.
he spoke about on the show that I listened to, How I Built This, he spoke about differentiation. And I mean, you're in a category where, good Lord, it's hard to differentiate. You're competing against extreme purpose-driven brands, some of the most admired brands in the world.
Yeah.
And you come in, you know, a couple of years back and are managing, at least from my view, to build something differentiated. When I heard him speak to that, Davis said, well, we're the only digitally native brand. And the second, we are super about people. When we think about the issues in the world, a lot of people are taking stances and a lot of issues. We're taking a stance on people, people who are in poverty, people who want to work for something bigger than themselves, which you just addressed. So this idea of extreme focus on people, and especially people in need, and being digitally native, he said, that's what makes us different. I'd like you to react to that, Brad. I mean, you probably do agree with that, but any more context for that? Anything else you'd add to that in terms of building something that is going to compete and succeed on your mission, but also against some amazing competition?
Yeah. I mean, you can't really pick a category to go into with more brands that you admire from the outside. I mean,
exactly.
It's tough. And I mean, even just taking Patagonia, for instance, I mean, we would always talk about them as they would always be our kind of like our best case that we would talk about all the time. Oh, you want to talk about mission? Von Schnard's brand. And we just would, you know, fanboy for Patagonia. I would say, you know, the things that Davis said, I would agree with all of those pieces to this. Mm-hmm. What has been really interesting from my perspective is a couple to add on to it, to add on to the human part first and then something additional, is that the people centricity, I do think is very different from other companies in terms of how we're approaching this. And when you talk about sustainability, you know, most people generally go right into like environmental good, like, okay, sustainable is environmental good. I think what Davis did and what the company's done is really thought about sustainability more from a people perspective of what does this mean for humans and how do we think about ourselves more broadly than that in the human condition. And if you work yourself up the pyramid in terms of where, you know, and unlocking potential for people like that is at the very top. And I think intentionally or not, like that's how he set what the ultimate mission was. And so coming into this, you know, when we talk about ESG, I mentioned ESG a little bit as a term, like, you know, we care a lot about the environment. We're an outdoor brand. We also care a ton about people, the people issues and the social issues. And that's why poverty alleviation is like, I think, such an integral part and such a differentiator in this category, but from a lot of other brands mm-hmm. too, that people see that value and they really care about that deeply. And so I think that coupled with how Davis led and how the people he brought into the company, how they all felt that way, really, really translated down into the brand and then ultimately into the products. The other piece to this to me that's really important though too, in that differentiation, is I do think there is differentiation in the way that, you know, our when people see the products and when people see the mission of who we are, it's more colorful products. They know there's sustainability, but that's like a bar in outdoor. There's a feeling, I think, coming into that it's more welcoming as a brand into maybe a category that's not so welcoming to newer people that want to come into it, right? Like outdoor traditionally, historically has been, you know, hey, there's a white guy that's on the side of a mountain that's climbing the mountain, and that's kind of set the bar. And that's totally fine. That's where that came from. But I think the idea of the outdoors, the idea of getting outside, the idea of all those things, Davis and the team that created this, like, are kind of challenged a lot of that. And I think that also has introduced a lot of new people into the brand that might otherwise have been like, outdoors not for me. Because the difference for Cotopaxi and the way we think about outdoors is this belief statement around see the world, make it better. And when I first came in, I was like, okay, what's the bridge between those things? Like, how do you do that? And the way you do it is because you meet people in between. You meet people, you learn about culture. And when you have that empathy and that compassion, when you see the world and you go on those experiences, and see the world could be, you know, it could be across the street in a park mm-hmm. you've never been to, or it could be a third world country that you've never experienced. Like, it could be anything. And I think that bridge and that reliance on the belief for the brand around getting to know other people and having empathy for them was really is special and different and interesting, and allows us to really stand, like, put that in the middle of everything that we do. So to me, that there's that part of it permeates everything and permeates why I think more people are attracted into the brand. In addition to great color, in addition to great design, mm-hmm. in addition to other packs that are very useful in terms of like our Alpa travel pack is like, and no joke, you know, you talked to me about General Mills products. I tell everyone about it. It's a butterfly open pack that you can like put as much stuff as you want If you don't want to carry a roller bag, you throw an eye, get a week's worth of stuff in that thing. And that's no joke. And it's like, you have products that then perform functionally, which, you know, we've talked about this before. Product doesn't perform, the advertising is a tax that you pay. But when you have a great product, it makes it so much easier to market. That also is part of the value proposition too.
I heard you speak in another interview about how that you don't get bonuses at Cotopaxi unless you move, you know, the business stuff, revenue and profit, but also impact. So tell us a little bit more about that. When you're having your reviews of your colleagues and your people, and you're talking about their year or their month or their quarter, yeah, obviously some things are easy to see, the sales numbers, the margins. But when you get to impact, what kinds of things do you talk about and how do you measure progress there?
A lot of our growth is directly attached then to how well and how much we do in terms of impact. So if we don't achieve our growth objectives, then we don't achieve our impact objectives because our sales are tied to our giving for our foundation. Mm-hmm. So that's one easy way of like, hey, when we talk about growth, doing good in growth as a brand are really, they're part of a circular process that always exists together. So I think there's always the natural inclination of like, oh, we're missing our growth number. It's like, yeah, if we're missing our growth number, also we're not delivering how much we need to the foundation so they can provide more grants to these organizations that are really trying to fight poverty. So that's one way we address it and talk about it quite a bit. Another way is more personal, actually. We have a specific number of hours that we want to deliver in terms of community service that we work, that we all opt into as employees. And so we have that on our list of objectives that if we deliver, you know, participation is, you know, at a certain percent, and if the number of hours at a certain number and we hit that, then we are achieving that impact. And so it's even broader than just a impact on our, you know, what our business does. It's an impact, it's a personal impact as well. And so I think everyone can own that. And those things you look at it like, oh, that's easy to do, but it's still, you know, people are busy. They have a lot of things they're doing in their life. Sure. And so to require folks to go do that. But what's great about it is it becomes very flexible in the way that people want to do that. So for me, my impact actually this last year was I volunteer and I coach my youngest son's basketball team. And I do that and I give a lot of hours to that. And I love it because I get to spend time with him and I love basketball, but it's the way that I like to give. And so it's a volunteer and I, you know, it doesn't feel like volunteering to me, but there's ways to kind of give back to community and to, you know, depending on what people are passionate about that you can kind of take with that. And that's a very powerful thing as well. It feels like you're doing good in the way that you want to do good in your community.
You mentioned a few minutes ago how different this job is and what you had at General Mills. And you know, you gave us some context for that. I'd like you to go there a little bit more deeply. I mean, you had one of the greatest CMO jobs in the world. It's like the P&G job, where you have 100 brands, big company, everyone knows its brands. Everyone knows sort of what you do when you walk down the street. This one's different. And you're developing all these different skills, and you did that very intentionally. But when you think about your work, a CMO of Cotopaxi versus CMO of General Mills, what's most different and what do you most like about it?
I think what's most different, and you know this well from working on a house of brands, is when I was in that job at General Mills, I had an impact, but I felt like my impact on a brand day to day was just very broad. And so I was leading brands, but I was leading through a center of excellence and through capability teams, through kind of like trying to inspire and set a vision. And not to take away any of that work, because I think that had an impact on all the brands and lifted up a level of the floor of where everything was at as a company in terms of how we did our marketing. And I did enjoy that. I think there's a lot to that kind of a role. And I think those roles are awesome. And I, you know, maybe at one point in my career would like to go back to something like that again. But it's a very different day to day, I think, versus being in something that's, you know, it's very specific where I spend my time. And I've definitely like talk about breadth and very like thin level to like very narrow and very deep. I felt like I needed to scratch the itch on that again, because I think we talked about this at one point super briefly, but my biggest fear as a marketer is always I'm going to like not be able to know how to do marketing anymore.
Yeah. It's moving quickly.
Yeah. It just changes so fast. Mm-hmm. And the basics and the fundamentals, we all know those things shift, but I think those things, like the other parts are just changing so dramatically. And so for me, being able to roll up my sleeves and like go back to the learning again, there's just so much to learn. So I think that part has been great to be able to kind of go deep. And I have every day I'm learning. I mean, any job, I think everyone can say they're learning something new, but I do feel like I'm learning so much that it's giving to me as much as I feel like I'm giving it to the brand. So I love that. And then the other piece of it to me is just, it matters to me a lot that there's brands like Cotopaxi that exist that truly have a belief to do something to leave the world better. I think a lot of brands say that. And at the end of the day, if they're going to make choices to cut things, they'll cut that before they cut what matters to the business. Not to say Cotopaxi is perfect in that way and can do things that are better, but it is a belief that runs through. And I want to be a part of that. I want to show how to get a brand that operates that way to be successful and be replicatable. And so to me, that's the mission that I'm really trying to accomplish. It's to make Cotopaxi successful. So there's more of a pathway for other brands to do this and feel like they could follow it or follow their version of it. And I love that about this job. I didn't get to do that at General Mills. That wasn't what the task was, but that's the personal mission that I get to bring with me to work every day.
When your colleagues and your leadership team talk about brands, companies they admire, what kinds of companies and brands do they talk about? Ones inside your category, outside your category?
Surprisingly, not as many in our category, which is interesting. And I think there's probably an as we grow larger and as we talk about more about market share versus just growth, I think that's going to shift. And we not to say we don't talk about, there's some amazing, like we said before, there's some amazing brands in the category. But we talk a lot about, give you a good example, we talk a lot about other D2C brands who kind of had their moment and then kind of just plateaued and in some cases went off the cliff. Not to say it's always good to learn from what happened to others, of course, and kind of be reflective, but also, just to understand where are there opportunities for us not to repeat those things and what are things that we're doing that are different or what things that they did really well that we shouldn't lose as we kind of like evaluate those brands. So we talk a lot about other brands that have kind of had that same kind of growth trajectory, but have kind of maybe fallen away a little bit and use it as a little bit of a cautionary tale. Because I think, a lot of brands, they get up to $100 million or $200 million, and then it becomes very hard to fight your way up through that next tranche of growth. Mm-hmm. We're heading to that point right now where we have to take that next big step. And the other conversation we have a lot, at least on the marketing side, is this, and this is a common conversation for every marketing conference, is like brand and performance, right? Like at the end of the day, we're a mission-driven brand, but we still do a lot of performance marketing. And we do a lot of performance marketing, we do a lot of PR. And I think we're at a position where the PR is fantastic and the performance has worked to where we've gotten, but we're in the shift mode now of like, okay, this brand has so many stories. Like, how are we telling this, pick the right stories and tell them in a way that we can start to really build the awareness and really build more affinity to make this thing get it to where it needs to go. And seen a lot of other brands that haven't been able to do that, even though they've got great brands, they got great products, mm-hmm. they got great stories to tell. So that's where we spend a lot of time talking about other brands, both that we admire, or both the brands that maybe haven't made it.
No, it's very smart of you. And it's a great lesson for everyone listening. I mean, you're a very fast growth brand. You've doubled your size many years and others have done that before you. Some have succeeded, many have not. So what can you learn from those that have not and reapply the learning so you do things in a different way?
Totally. The interesting category that's a related category to us that I feel like is a little bit ahead sometimes of apparel that I also really admire is footwear.
Yeah.
On our board, we have amazing leader from Hoka, mm-hmm. Wendy Yang, who used to be a CEO of Hoka brand. I'm very lucky in this job to be able to like connect and work with her. And just seeing what that brand has done has been amazing, their growth. An amazing product, very differentiated. But we've done a couple collabs with them, which has been very beneficial for us as well.
Oh yeah.
But then I also think about older brands like New Balance and watching what New Balance has done. I love the marketing that they're doing. I told the story the other day, but it was joking around with another marketing friend that 2 years ago we were I think a spring break in Paris, and my son was like, I want to go to the New Balance store. And I was like, dude, why? He's like, trust me, Dad. And I was like, my dad wore these shoes. And then we walked to the New Balance store. He's like, this, and this. I was like, those are the ones he wore. And he's like, I'm getting these. And he did. And I was like, all right, man, I'll stick with my Jordans. And then I realized very quickly that I was, of course, behind the curve a little bit. And and watching what that brand's done now is pretty amazing.
All right, let's flip into the creative brief. What's the favorite Cotopaxi item that you carry around or wear right now?
Can I give you two? Is that too many?
Sure. No, go for
it. Okay. I'm going to give you one on both sides. So I have this coat called the Kappa Hybrid, which is this jacket we make, which is very much more thin sleeves, but more of a little bit of a thicker jacket over the body. So you stay very warm. But if you're into like outdoor activities that it's a little chillier out, but you're going to be moving and in motion, it's the perfect jacket. You can, for me, I mentioned golf, like super easy to swing a club. I know there's people that like to do a lot of climbing. It's easy to climb in. It's easy to run in. So it's a really great versatile jacket. And I'm a big about versatility. Like I want to have stuff I can kind of, especially through COVID now, it's like, I want to wear things I can wear to the gym and also maybe into a meeting, which is always nice. The second pack that I'll call out, I'm just going to mention it again, because it's probably worth it, is like our Alpa packs are phenomenal, like for travel. And I think the other piece that you kind of asked in our category, we are an outdoor brand, but we're also a travel brand, an adventure travel brand. And so a lot of our products are made with like getting out, see the world, make it better. And the Alpa packs are ones that you, different sizes, different versions, all super comfortable, tons of utility, lots of packable, like super smart packable space, but they also look super, super killer, especially if you go to the Del Deal line and you can kind of exactly pick which colors you want. Those are a couple items that I use and I always tell all my friends about, because like, you know, you always are wanting to push the stuff that you're going to hope that they love. So then they go buy more stuff. And those are two that are really great.
You told me in the last interview that the first brand that made an impact on you was Nike, because you grew up in Beaverton. Of course, it had to be Nike. Is there a second brand that you would mention that made an impact on you early?
I loved a lot of apparel brands growing up. And so I always like whatever always comes to mind in some weird ways. And we're just talking about these brands that they're no longer even around anymore, but Gotcha and TNC Surf Company, all these shirts that I had as a kid. And they left a mark on me. The ones that still exist now are like Quiksilver and Billabong. Like I still, whenever I go to visit my family in Hawaii, I have to go to those stores and I have to check out all the surf stuff, even though I'm not like a big surfer. I just love, they still resonate with me for some reason. The brand is a marketer though, early marketer that I would say that had a big impact on me and still does. And I still think about it a lot, even though I don't use their product that much, is Red Bull. I mean, they're so far ahead of right now. I don't know if I'd say think about them calling that as a best class marketer, but when I was kind of still forming my thoughts on what great brands do, the way they innovated behind a purpose, the ability for them to be so disruptive in so many like really interesting ways on a product that was good, but not necessarily like the most amazing thing of all time. How they spun into a media company, how they spun into different events. I think we've talked about this, like this, we used to have this big event here in St. Paul, cracked ice. Like just, there's just all things that a brand, I feel like that they've done, I just still admire a lot and still use them as like a way to think about what kinds of, you know, they used to call them playgrounds. Like they'd go into like, hey, we're going to go into skate and we're going to go into like DJs. And these are playgrounds, and here's how we're going to build our brand. Our product fits, and here's what how we're going to think about adding value in these ways. I still think about that a lot when we're thinking about going to different categories, and we talk about it that way. So that I've really appreciated, like watching what they've done and learning from them.
You took an interim CMO job before coming to Cotopaxi at Beyond Meat. So interesting choice. We could probably do a whole show about that. What's your one insight from that time, Brad? I mean, it's a category that was hot, and it's not now.
Yeah.
So what's your one insight from your brief time there?
Yeah, I joined that as more of a consulting opportunity for myself, because I was kind of starting to move down smaller from Mills, and it was still CPG, but it was much, much smaller. Now they'd gone public, so it wasn't there for like the initial ramp up to them, but I came in there shortly thereafter. I think what I learned that even as a brand, you know, and I kind of see this at Cotopaxi, some of the same kind of challenges that we have. It is very, very difficult to scale up fairly strong executing company that operates in a way that I was used to, you know, at General Mills. You know, some of the things of you know, I took for granted and just how well oiled that machine was and how grooved it was. And then I thought, we're like, oh man, all of this is so like, there's so much detail. Like I'm just, you know, as a marketer, I got to be like a little removed from that. I came into a company that was trying to figure out how to mature and scale itself up. That was a big lesson for me of like, okay, when things are not necessarily run at that level, that creates a lot of headwinds for whatever function you're in, including marketing. I think the other thing on that particular brand is just in terms of like really understanding your consumer and what the demand is. And I think to your point, you know, huge, hot, very popular setup for all these reasons. But like really when you start to understand market size and think about it, there was opportunities, I think, there to really understand where there was demand. And then the last piece of it is just making sure that you've got a product that's truly like remarkable. Like you've got something that, you know, it's going to deliver. And I think Beyond Meat is, they have an amazing mission. And I think they've got some amazing products and people. But I also think there was a lot of work to still do to figure that stuff out there. So those were all pieces of it for me. And so Cotopaxi a little bit was also intentional for me about going a step before that to try to figure out, okay, if I come in when it's this small, kind of get ahead and help with some of those things. And so that's allowed me to be a little bit earlier in the process versus a little bit later. But I actually met one of the most coolest people ever from Beyond Meat. And she was the head of creative there. And she is like, Beth Moskowitz is her name. And she is a creative partnerships genius and super well connected in terms of like thinking about culture and some of the stuff that she did with Kim Kardashian and Kevin Hart on her very small business to like get that brand exploded was like some of the best kind of cultural partnership marketing that I had seen. And I came from a place with Melissa Wildermuth, who was like that for General Mills. And so I just find that that is such an important part of the modern marketing's arsenal today, that if you have a person that knows how to do that, it's just game changer. So we're working on that for Cotabaxi right now.
You've been a big believer for a long time in DE&I, diversity, equity, and inclusion. It's under some pressure now in society for reasons we don't have to go into. But how have you personally managed through that?
Well, I think it's, well, we won't go into it. It's very sad that it's come to a place where it's being used as in anything negative. But what I will say of going to Cotabaxi, and I was just had a nice conversation about this the other day with someone working for a company that's based out of Utah. Our CEO is half Chinese. I'm one of the execs, as you know, as an Asian person. One of the people on our board, another woman, is an Asian woman on our board. And so just in a very small company, and there's others as well in the company that we have that are in terms of different ethnicities and backgrounds. And so it gives me hope when I see that there's still other people I know who like look like me or who have similar experiences to me that are in really like big positions for companies and even a company that's small based out of where we're based. And so my hope for that is that younger people that are coming up that are, you know, from different ethnic backgrounds can still look up and see that there's more people that are in roles to give them some level of like hope and inspiration. And then for people like myself who are fortunate enough to be in them, that we can do our part to be mentors and connectors and supporters for people that are coming up. So I think it puts a lot of the onus back onto the folks that actually are in the roles to not just be comfortable and satisfied with it, but to actually kind of still lean in, which, you know, you'd hope that the progress we've made, you don't have to lose that. But I just think that that's really, it makes it even more important. And there's still so many great advocates that are out in the world. And I think as a marketer too, like I look out across all of the people that I know you talk to a lot, and CMOs and other great people that are still huge advocates of this and are still pushing it forward despite, you know, some other kind of cultural headwinds and other pockets that are coming forward.
Yeah.
And I still think it's really important for marketers to lead that chart. I mean, so much of marketers create so much influence in culture that if we can kind of continue to like find ways to do that, it's just really important. And we're finding ways to do that in Cotabaxi too. I mean, that's one of the things I love about very colorful brand. We attract lots of different types of people.
Yeah.
And that's exciting when your consumer base is very diverse, because you can speak and promote them as well.
And I don't think we're talking enough about, yes, it's the right thing to do for a lot of reasons, but it also results in better results because the organizations
Absolutely.
Are more creative. They're more inspired. They bring different ideas to the table. They work through problems in a different way. So it's better for business, and it's just the right, that's how we talk about it at P&G. It's good for business. It's the right thing to do.
It's good for business. It totally is. You know, I'll give you a quick example. And it's just, you know, one of our biggest partners that we work with is REI. And REI is an amazing brand. And they kind of told us flat out, like, hey, we want Cotabaxi in here because we know you're going to bring in a more diverse consumer to our door. Mm-hmm. That's just good for business. And so I think that, you know, to your point, that gets lost in this mix a little bit. And there's so much contentious pushback on every conversation always feels like it has to be so political, but like this just makes sense from every angle when you look at it that way.
Well, listen, Brad, it's been so great to reconnect. Happy Earth Week. Good luck with all the transitions with your family. I think you're working for a marvelous brand. Totally inspiring. I totally get why you did what you did, and you seem like you're having a blast. So it's been super, super great to be with you. The episode is full of wonderful lessons and inspiration. So thank you again for being who you are.
Well, thank you, Jim. And thanks for having me for Earth Week, too. It's such a great moment for the brand, but also such an important time as we think about all the things that we're trying to protect in the world. So thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
That was my conversation with Brad Hironaka. Three takeaways from this one for your brand, business, and life. The first one is a purpose lesson. We talk about purpose-inspired, purpose-based brands a lot in the show. What I love about Cotopaxi is they build into their KPIs the impact they're making as a company. It's actually tied to their revenue. They also talk to people in their performance reviews about the impact they're having personally. So they look at it corporately, they look at it personally. That's a real purpose-driven brand when it's measured and people are held accountable to something that measures its impact. Second takeaway, Brad is fantastic at learning from other brands. He talked about how their leadership team talks about brands that hit that 100, 200 million level and then declined. What can they learn from them so they don't make the same mistakes? He also is very curious about what's happening outside his category, his brand, to learn from brands that he admires that are making a big difference in the world and in their business. Third takeaway, career moves. Brad moved from a high status, high awareness job at General Mills to be the CMO of a small company. He did it for many reasons. One is he wanted to expand his skill base. He wanted to work on a small, high growth brand because he will learn things that he would not have learned at a larger company. So Brad's going to leave this job someday with more well-rounded skills. He will be a better leader and a more well-rounded person. That's it for this episode of the CMO Podcast. If you found this helpful and entertaining, I would be so grateful if you could share our show with your friends. And I would be super happy if you subscribed so you can be updated as we publish new episodes. And if you really want to help, leave us a 5-star rating and a positive review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. The CMO Podcast is a Gallery Media Group original production. Episodes of the CMO Podcast are produced by Gallery Media Group. The views and opinions expressed by podcast speakers and guests are solely their own and do not reflect the opinions of our sponsors or its personnel, nor do our sponsors advocate or endorse any individuals or entities featured on the episodes.